Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Wisdom Wide Open Radio. Join your hosts, Susie Bonham Craig, and me, Craig Hannis, as we welcome our guest, Jeff Brown, author of Soul Shaping, Journey of Self-Creation, and embark on another journey to open the portal of wisdom. We invite you to participate in the chat room and to call in with your questions and comments on 718-305-6584. Simply press the number 1 on your phone to enter the queue. And now, our journey begins.
Well, hello, soulmates and journeyers and soul shapers. Welcome to another episode of Wisdom Wide Open Radio. We're happy that you're able to join us this evening. It's pretty chilly here in Jersey, but we're really going to warm up the plate tonight. We're very happy to bring back on our show Jeff Brown, author of Soul Shaping, A Journey of Self-Creation. And tonight's show is going to be a little bit different than what we've brought to you in the past, because it regards a new movement and some new energy that's actually coming about in some realizations about our co-creation and the paradigm moving forward with both humanity and all of Earth's inhabitants. So what we're going to be discussing is Jeff Brown had initiated a group called the International Year of the Woman. And as you can see on our show page, if you happen to be on the show page, that Jeff initiated this group as an open invitation to all the men on the planet to devote a year in the not-too-distant future to a deep acknowledgement and appreciation of the women who have carried the torch of the open heart on this planet since time immemorial. And we're going to be bringing you on, Jeff, hopefully so we can really open this up. It's a very thought-provoking subject and topic to discuss, and really explore what the possibility of this is, what it's about, and you know what we can do as a part of our own collectiveness and humanity to be able to bridge this gap between the genders and move on to a more purposeful union and co-creation. So I'd like to welcome Hi, Jeff. Are you with us?
I am. I lost you for a minute. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. We're good. How you
Welcome.
Doing? Welcome. Be here. Thank you so much.
So, Jeff, you started this group.
Yeah.
And I have an inkling that it had something to do with your own soul-shaping journey and things that you came to realize in uncovering your own true path.
I think there were two primary influences. One really was my whole journey, and really the journey I wrote about in the book was my own journey from an armored warrior trial lawyer, you know, like an urban warrior dude, really driven and quite super armored on a physical level, but also armored in my emotional body. And I ultimately found out that those were basically the same processes. And really my journey was about trying to get out of, you know, I had two pathways of possibility pushing up inside of me. One was the warrior trial lawyer identification, and then there was this hazier and more subtle and really more surrendered path that was calling out to me. And my journey was really about trying to move in the direction of that voice or that call inside of me, which at first was really a very subtle and distant flute. And in order for me to really cross that bridge of consciousness from what I identified myself as warrior, to this next stage in my soulular journey, I really had to move in the direction of a more feminine or receptive way of being. You know, my path was really to come from a more surrendered place. And to get to that place, I had to do a lot of emotional clearing, and I had to learn how to befriend confusion, and I had to peel away my physical warrior armor and deal with the emotional material that was held within me. So So as my journey unfolded and towards the end of it, just before I started to write Soul Shaping, I had a powerful love connection that really took this warrior down to his knees. My heart was open so wide. And it was such unfamiliar terrain for me. And then ultimately I had a decision to make. You know, my heart was broken, you know. It was an impossible situation. It was unimaginable that I wouldn't be with this woman. And then I had this decision to make. Either I knew I was going to go back to armored warrior, back to that kind of male traditional archetype, or I was going to open my heart and the heart of that pain and move in the direction of what ultimately has proven to be the soul shaping, or the writing of soul shaping. And I ultimately made that latter decision. So that's part of where this came from. I began over time to have, I guess, profound compassion for the, you know, my grandmother's heart, you know, the grandmother heart. I was so identified with my grandfather through the first part of my life. And as my heart started to open, I began to understand that really she was the most courageous warrior in the family. And that was the second influence. You know, after my grandfather died, I just got much closer to my grandmother. And as I moved in the direction of a more enheartened way of being, I recognized that her and I were soulfully connected in ways I had never imagined. And so the group grew out of the desire to really honor that. She died a few years ago, and it's just out of respect for her and for that part of her that held the space for the open heart and the pained heart through a tremendous number of obstacles. Yeah.
Wow. Well, you know, when you talked about the love experience that you had, and you talked about being brought to your knees, could you explain a little bit about how the difference between the male warrior role that I guess you were so we're embracing, believing that that's what, you know, we're brought up to believe, and how exactly your heart opened and what you were feeling?
Yeah. Well, you know, when I met her, her name is, in the book is Rachel. When I met her, you know, it was like I had kind of been avoiding heartfelt connection. You know, I'd been like very conveniently, you know, being in more objectified connections or connections with people that didn't challenge me to open that deeply. You know, it was like a very safe bet path. And I guess I had done enough work in my heart that I then started to feel like I was ready for something a little bit more opening. And I actually asked the universe to bring it to me around the same time she did. And so when I first started to connect with her, these sensations that I had with her were like, you know, it was like just being with her, I felt like I had known this woman forever. It was, and I was cynical about this stuff, and it was like tangible, you know. It was so familiar, and it was so, and she was so similar to me. And, you know, it's what Jean Ochterberg called an uncommon bond. I actually ultimately wrote my thesis at Saybrook about it. And, you know, it was like we had had many lifetimes together. And one of the first experiences I had with her, which was very foreign to me on a cellular level, was I was just cracked open to a unity consciousness experience, you know. It was everything I had been striving for in meditation, you know, and I just got it. Just simply being in her presence, I was cracked open to this vast terrain, and a tremendous amount of emotional material came to the surface, you know. It was like excavating all of these held feelings, both positive and negative. And at first I resisted it. It was just like, it was a whole new way of being for me, and I was not comfortable with it. And one of the places where it became most obvious that it was a challenge to me was in my sexuality with her, because I had been like more selfish as a lover and more objectifying, you know. And with her, it just all I wanted to do was love her. All this love came out through my hands, through the tips of my fingers, and I resisted it. It was like I was being called to bring my heart and my genitals together. I call it the heart-genital highway in the book. And that was the only path that was possible for us. And so I resisted. She was ready to rock, and I was like, I would get physical, and the energy would build, and then I would retreat. Because in order to be in this place sexually with her, I had to be really deeply in my heart center. And that wasn't really possible for me. And we just kept at it, and the tension kept building. And then there was this choice point where I just had to make a decision as to whether I was going to come from my heart or whether or not I was just going to ultimately have to retreat from the connection, because there was no middle ground possibility. She called me on every moment when I wasn't there, right? I didn't even know I wasn't there till she called me that I wasn't there. But then I'm like, I knew it. I wasn't there, you know. So it summoned me to bring all of these aspects of myself together. And in so doing, I really began to have a much, much deeper taste. I mean, I had been in my heart on a more solitary journey, doing a lot of my own emotional release work, grounding it in therapy, but really on my own a lot. And this was the first time I had been called to open my heart in a relational dynamic on this level. And it was transformative, that's for sure.
Okay, well, what did you realize as a result of, now, I mean, this is really, really grown for you, this whole aspect, to be able to now reflect on your grandmother and reflect on this feminine energy and really, you know, and I'm using the word your vulnerability coming to the surface and you allowing that. What is it that you're resonating with now that you're feeling that, you know, that men from where they stand now need to experience this, you know, this their own vulnerability and that this healing that takes place, because apparently you're connecting it to
Can you hear me? I can't hear a word.
Can you hear me, Jeff?
Now I've got you. Yep. Yeah.
Okay. Susie, are you back?
Right, you're drifting. But yeah, sorry. Are you there, Susie?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Sorry, just give me the last part of that question again. I didn't hear that.
No, I was just saying, obviously now this has really grown into something larger for you, and
yeah.
you're having a view of the bigger picture about this, you know, resonating in this vulnerability that's come to the surface about how this has really been, you know, since time immemorial, how the male warrior role had really become deeply ingrained. And, you know, with the, I guess, suppression of women and the, you know, the divine feminine and their energy. So what are you seeing now? What are you seeing about, you know, why this movement?
Well, I think two things. One of the things that happened to me in that love experience, that in the purest moments of love connection, everything just seemed really genderless, you know, or transgender, or gender inclusive, or something. It really, we just entered this terrain which was just soul central. That was it, and everything else just fell away. These divisions and ideas of self that were affixed to gender. So it was like I feel like we had some glimpse of the possibility of some kind of genderless or gender bridge, really, where you imagine both genders, and I think this is happening over time in the culture, moving slowly towards one another, right? And as they move towards one another, all of those gender identifications that are unhealthy and over-adapted start to fall away. So you just imagine a man and a woman walking towards one another, and the man's armor is slowly coming off as the culture progresses away from survivalism to a safer place. So men don't have to occupy that space anymore. And women are moving towards men, and instead of just having to hold the space for the heart in the family and in the culture, they're now able to be more armored or warrior or assertive or, you know, animus or something. And so that by the time we reach the middle, both genders are everything. They're occupying the whole archetypal field of consciousness, and then they merge together as one soul being, really. And that's the vision of possibility that emanated from that experience. So I'm kind of holding that vision of the world as it ought to be, let's say, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm also very tapped in and realistic and grounded, I think, about the world as it is. So, like, how do we get there, you know? And so the International Year of the Woman group, which suggests that we put a year aside in the not-so-distant future where men are accountable, you know, where we hold, like, accountability circles, for example, one example, where women have an opportunity to talk about the abuses that they've endured. Men have an opportunity to actually hold the space for it. So we arrive at some kind of forgiveness that's not a bypass, but that's an authentic forgiveness, for example. Because, like, I don't think we're going to get to that place until we deal with the anger and the pain that's happened, right? So it's like trying
okay,
to
well,
identify. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, well, let's use an example. I mean, now we have domestic violence groups. We have, you know, these organizations against domestic violence. And obviously that's just, you know, one element of the nature of what you're talking about. And it's great when we're talking about just a one-on-one relationship and how, you know, men can find that healing like you found and have your heart open up. But what about throughout society and throughout cultures? What would those accountability circles look like?
Well, let me just say first that, I mean, I think this is happening. You know, I think that for me, the way I see it is that the survivalism, like, you know, sociologically, cultures being kind of gripped at the root in terms of basic safety, you know, basic animalism, the kind of fear of not having enough, which, you know, being like under potential attack, of not having enough food on the table, really pulls us back into this consciousness where one gender, usually the physically stronger gender, then occupies that role of physical armored protector, stay away from your heart because you've got to stay in your focus, you know. Then women end up kind of holding the fort for the open heart because men aren't. So I think the more we continue to move in the direction of rule of law all around the world, so there's a safer basic root structure where, you know, where things are like not as anxiety-based and not as anxiety-provoking, where we are starting to think about the more important questions of like, why are we here? What are our callings? What does our soul-shaping journey look like? All of that. We just naturally start to move in the direction of an environment where men don't have to be occupying the space for that armored, edgy place anymore. And they will naturally, organically, as part of their soul actualization movement, it's a tendency, move in the direction of then starting to ask these more nuanced questions, right? I mean, I think it's happening, right? The idea of a particular year where we do that is really to sort of push, you know, when I first started, it was more of an idea of a concept, really. And now there's almost 3,000 members of the group, and so it's starting to move in the direction of something more possibly tangible. The year that I proposed in a few years might be too soon for it, but and now I'm starting to just develop ideas, not really fully formed, of how that would exactly look like. On a very basic level, I just imagine particular communities where people who are a little bit more conscious and who are more interested in these ideas form groups, men and women, and begin just to talk about the feelings, the experiences they've had. It just, for me, it gets much more interesting and complicated if you believe in the soul's journey. You really believe that we go, you know, we occupy different archetypal spaces and genders as life, as we progress, you know, it becomes a very interesting circle when you consider the possibility that I was a woman once, right? You know, that's when it begins to get more interesting and complicated. But to keep it on a more simple and grounded level, I think we just begin talking about what we know to have happened in this lifetime and holding this space for each other. Yeah.
Okay. Craig, do you have a question?
Oh, there's lots. You started out by talking about, alluding to Rachel and your deep love for her,
yeah,
and how you changed the way you showed your love. And I felt what you were saying in consciously changing the way you harmonized yourself in conjunction with Rachel, obviously. But I have a question for you on that. It's going back, but it's going to go forward as well. Did you feel love completely from Rachel? Did you feel as if you two had become harmonized or in a mutual kind of bonding relationship? In other words, did you feel you gave love and you changed the way you gave it and showed it and felt it, but did you feel love in that way in return?
Yeah, I think she, you know, we were both, I think, old souls with young psyches. I think mine was just a little bit older. So when she was able to get in that open place, I felt that the love was absolutely equal in terms of its expression. But I think that, you know, it's like that saying, great love uncovers everything unlike itself, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the closer we got to that, and the longer we stayed in that deeply connected, essence-centered place together, the more her unresolved stuff, a lot from her early life, she felt it was from past lives together, but even just from her early life, I think rose to the surface of consciousness. And, you know, she had really, I think, been spending a lot of years not dealing with that material, you know, not even being able to name that material. So I think that young psyche piece ultimately required her to push it away. I mean, I'll tell you, Craig, you know, even though I had done, you know, a fair amount of work to that point, I could at least name my stuff, and I remember we got engaged, you know, and I remember we were walking up this road from where she came from, and I remember just feeling like absolutely pure, just completely in that heart place. And it was like everything, I felt everything was connected. It was like love was my gateway to unity. It was absolutely my path. And I remember feeling like, okay, here we are. I don't know if I can hold this. I mean, this is so profound and so subtle and also such a gateway to all the pain held in the collective unconscious, you know, at the same time. I felt like if I could hold it, even in my warrior with my strength, you know, it was going to be a very, very difficult journey. I felt like we were vibrating at a place that the world wasn't yet for that moment. And it was like how to stay there together. And it was like she kind of knew. You know, we've had many interactions since and has, you know, really communicated to me that she felt like we had a glimpse of what's possible between humans, but that really it's almost impossible to sustain it at this time. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. I don't,
is there something you would have done differently to hopefully reshape
it? No, nothing I could have done. I think absolutely not. There, I mean, I know her stuff, and I know the patterning, and I know what came before. I did everything that I could have done to hold that connection to save. And now I look back on it, and I don't long for it. You know, I really feel like it was like the grist for the soul mill that brought me through to a place where I could now move in the world from this benevolently. And not that I don't need my edgy warrior sometimes to do all the things that I'm doing now, but I feel like my intentionality is really coming from this cleaner heart place, you know?
Mm.
And I think that I converted that experience. I really felt that at some point. It was like, okay, you're either going to sit here and die and just like armor up and detach from the moment, or you're going to convert this into something that kind of comes from that same loving energy, but, you know, that is more workable and sustainable. And I think that's what soul shaping is for me. It's like really, in a way, an expression of my love for her, you know,
mm-hmm.
in the only way that I can express it and to bring that energy out into the world. But, you know, I don't think there was anything anybody could have done differently. It happened exactly, absolutely the way that it was supposed to happen.
So you have the wonderful power now to have let it be.
Yeah.
Or let it go.
Yeah, the Beatles were right. Let it be. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. No, that's absolutely it. It just feels like completed path, you know. Not that the love isn't there, and not that if I see her, it won't immediately. I mean, the zone is there for us, and there's nothing that has happened will ever detract from that zone.
Mm-hmm.
It's just I kind of understand that this was not a sustainable thing. And, you know, we grow up thinking that if you meet the one, you're going to be with the one for the rest of your
mm-hmm.
days. And, you know, I mean, that just dealing with that illusion alone took a lot of time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was like we polished the rough diamond of each other's souls for as long as we needed to, and then on we go. Yeah.
Yeah, so that people come into your life for a reason and a season, right?
Yeah, that's it. She was like a key member of my soul pod, you know. I mean, there were a number of individuals along the way. You know, like I'm doing this movie with Bhagavan Das. He was an absolutely essential part of my learning process. I really identify. And they're all linked in together, like I'd meet one with the other one, and that's how it goes. And once you find peace with that, you start to, like, enjoy the journey more because you're just waiting for the next character that's going to come around the next corner with the next lesson, you know. And it's not all bad if you see the feelings all, you know, I say in soul shaping, repressed emotions are unactualized spiritual lessons. You know, if you see the feelings all the way through with these very key figures in your life and get the lesson, like not just like talk about getting the lesson, but really get it in your soul bones, like feel it, you know, then you start to love this stuff when it happens because you know that on the other side of it is you're going to ascend to the next step in your soul shaping journey.
You know, they're all catalysts to our own spiritual growth. I mean, I do believe in these soul agreements, you know, and the ones that spend the most time with us and we have the hardest lesson, you know, to go through are really those really large steps of growth that we make on our path, you know. Like I remember someone asking me once, you know, Susie, who are your mentors? Who are the ones who influenced you upon your spiritual path? And I would have to say it was probably the people who gave me the most grief, you know, that were really my mentors. And really, as you call it, you know, broke your heart open and able to feel this. And once we can look at how purposeful those people are in our lives, it does make the journey easier. It makes the acceptance easier. And we do look forward for more, you know, to more opening. But, you know, getting back to the group now, and you were talking about dedicating a year. So let's say we start this year tomorrow, or let's say we start it January 1st. What are some of the things that men themselves can really start to think about or resonate with? You know, maybe there's some of them on the brink now that are feeling some pain, you know, from either their relationships in the past with, you know, mates or even with their mothers or grandmothers.
I think one of the best things that men can do to show respect for women in this way is to start to do more work on them, on their interior lives, you know? I mean, I think that's one of the most important things, and I think that's the thing that will make a group, a year like this, absolutely possible, you know? You know, for men to actually, like, put aside time in their lives, like, get out of distraction, try to get out of detachment, get out of the armor, and start to do, you know, I went through a number of different steps on my journey that I had to do on a very individual level in order to prepare me to have this, to hold this kind of perspective and make it real for me, you know? So men can start doing that work. You know, they can start going in and doing some psychotherapy and doing some excavation work to start to peel away the emotional layers, the material that they're holding. As an example, they can start doing breath works, because intense breath works like holotropic will excavate a lot of the feelings that are held inside and allow some of those feelings to move out. You know, because, I mean, we have to move out our rage. I had to move out a whole lot of anger to be able to hold this kind of a delicate perspective and to make it real for myself, as an example. One of the things that helped me a lot to prepare myself for this kind of perspective was doing a lot of body work. I got a lot of massage, and I didn't just get maintenance massage. I did really deep massage, because I found that the more that I peeled away the physical armor that was held in my system, the more that I uncovered a lot of the emotional material that I was repressing. There was no distinction, like bioenergetics and Alexander Lowen said, between my physical holdings and the holdings of my emotional body. So that's another thing that men can start to do, to start to peel away the armor. And, you know, I think that that's the first place to go for us, because I think that the more we have contact as men with our heart, you know, a more enheartened way of being, the more that we're going to then be more comfortable owning and holding the space for the suffering that women have experienced when they express it to us. Yeah,
but what about the men out there that are really wholeheartedly connected to that brave, armored warrior soul and really instinctively believing that that is who their male gender represents?
I mean, what can we do to shift that?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think that it's happening sociologically. I think the more we move away from a survivalistic and animalistic world, the more those men, I mean, I think of it this way. It's like 9/11 happened. You know, I remember this. I was doing all this opening work just before that happened. I was at Harbin Hot Springs. I was like so open, you know, and that's where I had the glimpse of soul shaping and having to write it. And then I came back and like 9/11 happened, you know, and I found myself immediately, and I don't know, Craig, if you had this experience, but I really went right back to warrior. I was hyper-vigilant. I was getting in protective mode of people that I knew. You know, I was like really, really getting into that energy again. It was so familiar and so close to the surface of my life. And, you know, and now as time is like we haven't had that event happening, I find myself coming back to softening. But I think it took a few years for me to really be able to feel my heart again in the way that I had felt it before that event. I took that event real seriously as a male warrior archetype. And so I just think the more we move in the direction, and this is a slow process, I mean, I'm realistic about it, towards a safer reality for everybody, I think men will let go of that hyper-vigilant stance. And I think the next place to go naturally, organically, is more in the direction of the heart. I think it just happens when we're safe.
So would you agree that it's mostly based on fear of losing that identity that they're so attached to?
No, I think it goes back farther, much farther back, that men have been holding the space, the safety space, the warrior space, the protect the tribe space for thousands and thousands of years. You know, it's like, and I, you know, it's so funny. It's like, here's a very simple example. My grandfather, you know, my grandmother was always the one holding the pain in the family, you know, dealing with reality, emotional reality. And then he would, like, he was known as the distractor. You know, he would, like, go to the racetrack. He didn't want anything to do with those feelings, right?
Mm.
It was like, for the longest time, I just thought that he's just avoidant. It was just like I was looking at it in very simplistic terms, you know. He was just not mature enough to handle. And now I, like, look back on it, and I really understand that he really saw that, and maybe it was true, that if he really dropped into that heart place, he wasn't going to be able to be in that armored focus place that he needed at that stage in the culture's development in order to provide for his family, you know. Like, that was his context. So these patterns, you know, evolved for some reason, and what was the reason that he was holding so tightly to that, you know? And why am I in this generation now more able to open to these more subtle considerations than he did?
Well, I think that's like what you said. It's a natural evolution of what's going. When you find that space, you had that experience, so it pretty much opened a portal for you, the door for you to have that experience. And it's
absolutely
only an experience you alone can have.
Absolutely. But 40 or 50 years ago, because of the way that I would have been armored, I mean, I wouldn't have had done 15 years of intense psychotherapy 40 or 50 years ago. I wouldn't have come that close to my heart so that when the next step of heart opening came, walked through the door, I would have been available to it, you know? You know, these were completely foreign ideas, you know? He was just a pragmatist. It was very simple. Do you have a job? Is it a reliable and predictable income, you know? Are you going to be able to pay the mortgage? We have memories of virtual homelessness. You know, they're entrenched in our bones. This is all that matters. All this other stuff is too nuanced and silly, you know? And that's true. At that time, that was absolutely true. And now we can even talk about these things. So what, you know, what do you feel has happened in the culture to reach the point where we can even have this conversation?
That's a great question for everyone.
Here we are. Something happened. What's happened?
That is a good question. It's kind of a what I would call a contra conditioning element out there. Contra being against the concept of war, the reality of war, against the reality of watching football and getting involved in the competitive aspects and the manly man type stuff. But what are some of those contra conditioning elements in our society, in the world today, that are moving us toward, moving men especially, toward a greater acceptance of women within the context of oneness, gender oneness.
Right, absolutely. Soul to soul. Soul to soul, heart to heart. Like, I used to watch football when I was more of a warrior, and I really, now I look, and I was insane. I mean, I was like a San Francisco 49er fan. It was like they were my tribe. I would die for my tribe, you know? And it was because I was really identified with that male warrior, which is where it really was, where there were divisions and separations, and everything was so primal and tribal, you know? And as I've gotten farther away from that and become, I think, more inclusive or integrated in terms of my surrendered and my assertive self, watching football seems dopey to me now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So something had to shift inside of me so that I'm farther away from seeing things in such tribal, primal division terms, you know, separate conference, separate division, other side of the country, all that, and really starting to see things more connected. And the Internet's helping. You know, it's bringing us more into contact and connection with one another and breaking away, breaking through some of those separation barriers so that these ideas of things, we start to see everybody as part of our shtetl. Yeah? So the shtetl is a vaster shtetl now instead of a tiny little microcosm, and that's I think, what's happening. Yeah. So now I don't understand sports anymore. I mean, I like the 49ers, but I don't really, you know, really care. And I think that really, you know, it has a lot to do with doing this work to move in this into this more integrated direction. Yeah.
You know, Jeff, I just want to break for a moment and let our listeners know, for those who have just tuned in the chat room, we're speaking with Jeff Brown, author of Soul Shaping, A Journey in Self-Creation. And speaking about a Facebook group that he started called the International Year of the Woman, and I encourage all of you to, if you're on Facebook, to please go to Jeff Brown's Facebook page and befriend him, and you'll find the International Year of the Woman in the group section. Also, Jeff, I'd like to open up the lines for callers because I do have one on the switchboard right now, and I'm really curious because I'd love to get as much into, you know, interaction as we can on this subject, if you don't mind.
No,
okay?
I wouldn't, and I'd also like to ask Craig a question, too, if we get a chance.
Go ahead.
Sure, would you like to do that first?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm totally curious. Yeah, you see, in your voice, I feel like very strong male energy. You know, I feel like that part of me, I feel very simpatico with that, right? I'm curious a little bit, just if you're open to sharing it, just what your journey has been in terms of in these directions. You know, have you moved in the direction of like a more heartfelt experience, and what kind of things did you have to go through to bring you to that point?
Oh, very, very much so. I think it probably began to evolve when I was in college. And the first experience I had with open-heartedness, without going into a lot of detail, was the fact that I had several gay homosexual professors.
Okay.
And my initial reaction to that, coming from a hardened high school setting in New Jersey, tough guy stuff, and everybody, you know, homosexuals, gay stuff is negative.
Right.
These were human beings. I recognized these people as human beings. They weren't these weird, gay, you know, disturbed human beings. They were wonderful human beings. And I didn't have to be one of them to accept that and acknowledge that. And that was my real opening. And from there, it just kind of transcended to women, to the woman I married, and children. When I had my daughters, I had two daughters and two sons. My daughters were first, and I became just sensitized. I also had a mother and a grandmother who were incredibly sensitive human beings.
Yeah.
And exercise unconditional positive regard for everyone. And it just kind of all came together for me. I mean, that sounds oversimplified. There's a lot more in it, but it was that way. The heart rose to the surface. I also majored in English and read probably 200 or 300 of the great classic works, studied philosophy extensively. And my openness to life, the world, humanity, people, enabled me to remain that way and be sensitive to the needs of others and the oneness of people and the spirituality, the universe, how we are all part of one entity, so to speak, whether it's in a religious, from a religious perspective or non-religious perspective. We are all connected, and I feel that. I was an athlete, and I was hardened, and I was tough, but it's almost like a dichotomy. Yes, I could still be that way, while also having an open heart and caring deeply about human beings, no matter their gender.
So armor should just be a conscious adaptation that we put on when we need it and then we remember to take it off at the end of the day. I'm wondering, do you feel conflict internally sometimes, like you're coming from a more receptive or what would be traditionally feminine way of interfacing with someone and hear that voice of the adapted male warrior talking to you, dissing you, giving you attitude, or does it really feel mostly integrated now?
It's integrated. It's wholly integrated. I don't even have those visitations from afar in my mind or in my thought processes. It's all one.
Yeah. Beautiful.
It's openness and receptivity.
Yeah, beautiful.
Jeff, you're talking to humanity's 101 over here.
I don't know.
So it goes back to that statement. It sounds, it's trite, but it's meaningful. Can't we all get along? And it happened, 20 years ago? I mean, that hit me hard in a very positive, reawakening, wonderful kind of way when that happened. The horror that created it is a reminder to people, too. But, of course, his life changed after that as well, not so much in a great way, but can't we all just get along? And it's not just getting along. It goes beyond that. It goes way beyond that.
Yeah, you try to imagine this world, and I think this is what this group is about, as I come more clearly to define it. And, you know, it's like we're coming from then. We've gotten past this, like, collective unconscious rage, all of this gender business, you know, all that. And all we're really doing is devoting our life to just, like, trying to identify what our soul's journey is. You know, what is my soul scripture for this lifetime? what lessons am I here to learn? What gifts am I here to open? What callings am I here to manifest? And when I start coming from that place, this idea of making trouble for anyone else seems ridiculous. You know, it's like, that's it. It's just soul to soul, interfacing with soul, namaste, no mistake. Why are we here in this room together? Why are we here on this radio show together? What do we have to offer each other, you know, in relation to our cellular journey, not in relation to our egoic satisfaction, not in relation to power games, not in relation to any of that. Just simply, here we are, Craig, here I am. What are we doing here? So, you know, so my witness is listening to this conversation and listening to you and saying, oh, this is good for you, Jeff, because here's, you're having an experience of an integrated male whose heart is open but yet feels very solidly a dude. And isn't that a fantastic, fantastic impression to take inside of yourself? Because I don't meet that too often, right?
Well, that is ascending with both feet on the ground, is it not?
Yeah, absolutely. Earth and sky, all that. Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's like you got your eye on the door and you know you got to take care of the bottom line. And at the same time, your heart is open. You keep your heart open as long and as deeply as you possibly can. And to me, that's like, it's like living in the world as it is and living in the world as it ought to be and holding it all at the same time, you know?
You know, and I can stand here as I have witnessed Craig being totally who he just claimed he is.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he buckles down and his heart is completely open.
Yeah.
You know, and that, I don't see that vulnerability, you know.
You're back.
Wow, that's strange. We keep.
Yeah, I just went out for a couple of about 20 seconds.
Yeah,
you know, and we lost our caller on the switchboard too. But I do encourage people to call back in if you had called in and raised your hand for with a question or a comment for Jeff or any of us about the group. But what I'm not sure what anybody caught there. But what I was saying was, you know, I bear witness to my experience with Craig, you know, as a male and in interaction on a lot of different levels, that both those elements are there. And there is no fear that I can say. I mean, he expresses himself fully in the moment, you know, whatever that may be.
Right.
So,
you know,
it's really nice to know that men are opening up to that.
Absolutely. And as I listened to him, I was also aware of the parts of me that aren't feeling all the time that integrated. You know, lately I've really been hearing from my archetypal male warrior more than I had for a long time before. And, you know, he's assertive and he's strong and he's driven and here he is, you know, and I've heard that sort of internalized judgment as a male trying to be more and more receptive and more surrendered. And now and then he comes and he says, you know, that's frivolous or that's weak or that's, and I know part of it is connected to soul shaping is getting so activated, and there's a part of my warrior that really knows he needs to be focused and hold this thing together. It's benevolently intentioned, so he's the benevolent warrior in this, but, you know, he really trusts that point of focus more than my getting lost in more, I guess, heartfelt consideration sometimes. And part of it is there's a wisdom to it. It just doesn't come through in the most kind and compassionate way. But there is a need to be focused and grounded and to hold these things together right now. It's just finding the way to sort of have him inside always coming from a place of compassion when he's expressing that truth. You know, and I think that's still my growing edge.
Well, that is that inner work that you're talking about in preparing, you know, men for this release and this healing that goes on is to prepare for that. But before we lose our caller, I'd like to get them on the line to see if they have a question, and then perhaps we can spend a little time on the role that our divine feminine is playing in being able to open up and allow this male energy to come to the surface and to honor that vulnerability when it surfaces. Because I think that might be a little interesting perspective as well. So we'd like to bring on our caller. Hello, caller, if you could just tell us where you're from and what your question is or comment.
Is that me?
Yes, or
Hi, Jeff. This is Argovan. I don't know if you know me. I'm one of your Facebook followers.
Yes,
and,
I think you're on the wall today.
Right. I just wanted to say hello. I was finally back in U.S. and able to connect with you. And just wanted to say hello and also to give a little comment as far as this whole topic that we're getting into today is probably about the balance that us women are bringing into this whole equation and through our emotions, allowing the men to express or at least find the freedom to maybe show some of their emotions, which traditionally it was the right thing to repress. So in a way, we are maybe a sounding board for men to be able to open up and recognize the emotion that they're feeling within. And I know that is true with my husband. And today I can say after about 15 years of real hard work, he has actually made a comment that, you know, I am his strength and that through me he's able to actually achieve and move. And he's actually showing emotions, whereas he was raised in a military family and with a very hard-line father who kept teaching him to be really harsh with his mannerisms and how he went about getting what he needed from everybody, including myself. So through love, as you mentioned, and through real compassion and real true love and understanding, he has come about to really understand that he needs to change his ways. And he is really evolving, and it's really beautiful that now he is really a different person. He's much softer. He understands. He takes time to, you know, be caring and speak softer and to really reflect on my emotions. And I think he's really balancing instead of being this crazy, hard-lined man that was just repressing everything and then reacting in a very negative manner.
So what do you attribute that shift in him to? You're holding the space for him with love and compassion. I got that. Do you feel like anything else has shifted in him or other circumstances have prevailed that have contributed to that process?
I think it's because he realizes that I'm very authentic and I'm real in this relationship. I'm not about to be very flaky here. And he has trusted me. He's learning to trust. And a lot of issues that most of us have problems, and that's why we don't become authentic and loving, which, you know, many of us have issue with trust.
Yeah.
And he's learning to accept that because I have stayed very strong on both feet, and no matter how many times he came at me with, you know, we don't want to go into details, but many, many very, very difficult times, I stood my grounds and I was there to show him the love that he needs. And
so you wore him down with your patience and your genuineness, it sounds like.
And understanding of where he was coming from, because, you know, we are all basically beautiful souls, and it's just our environment sometimes puts us astray. So,
what would you say to women who are in incredibly abusive relationships, though? Like, it's very hard space for the other, because then they're not acknowledging their own suffering. So,
Incredibly abusive relationships, I would say, get out. I mean, get out if you don't have the strength. I don't want to sound boastful, but I think I'm pretty strong. I mean, some people might have called this fairly abusive, but I can say that he is totally a changed man. I could have left the first month of our marriage. But through him, I also learned how I needed to change in order to be a better communicator or a better listener or a more compassionate. I mean, I evolved through the hardship that I had to endure with him, but I am sitting here more loving, more patient, and having a much fuller understanding of what is my role in this world. And I think if I had it very easy, I probably wouldn't be here.
Got it. So that was your contract. You're both learning from one another. One of the things that I take from what you're saying that I think is important, that in a relationship where it's not so horribly uncomfortable that the only answer is to leave it, there is something to be said, and I think this will help for women to hold the space for men's context, to have a willingness to look at where this warrior way, edgy way, armored way comes from sociologically and historically. And that's not to say to put away their own legitimate need to express their discomfort or any suffering they've endured, but at the same time to try to hold the space for and to look deeper than the obvious to understand where these gender relationships are emerging from, where these mm-hmm. archetypal identifications come from, so that
exactly.
we have a deeper understanding of one another.
Exactly. And as I said, I learned that because I didn't know his parents. I married him in U.S., and I didn't know his background. And when I traveled with him to Iran and met his father and saw his family structure, I became more understanding of why he was acting the way he was. So, you know, as you said, we need to reflect on their background and why they are who they are and without judgment. So, you know, we need to give time and that space, as you say, to discover all that.
Right. Thank you. Thanks for sharing that.
And thank you for all your hard work, Jeff. We appreciate all your hard work, all your beautiful messages and videos and all the time that you're devoting to mankind.
Yes.
And
humankind.
I wanted to connect and thank you for all that.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay. Take care.
Thank you, Archibald, for sharing.
Bye-bye.
That pretty much opened the door for what I wanted to say.
Exactly. Have a good one.
So thank you. Bye bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, when we talk about, you know, what is it that women can do now? And I feel that, Jeff, as much as you're talking about us having these conversations now, and it's actually happening. And for myself, I think through my relationships, what I've been able to recognize and have my own self-realization about was to get back into that nurturing stage and seeing what lies beneath that armor. And when you know that there's something that lies beneath it and you provide that space and you allow that space and that willingness to have the understanding that you can sit and provide that space and encouragement in just letting, you know, that man and his soul actually emerge.
Go ahead.
No, I've been told before that, you know, I'm here to do death. You know, like I'll sit for a really long time with someone until I see them see their own potential.
Right. fantastic humanistic intention, but I also, you know, I think one of the reasons that I put the group together is also so that women, you know, so many women I've known were holding the space for my nonsense throughout my 20s and early 30s in particular. They were fantastic. I had an amazing ability to pick the most loving and compassionate, patient women so I could dupe them into enduring my nonsense. And I really took advantage of their love and gave very little back. And I think it's also important as we move forward on this, in the direction of this gender bridge, this inclusive bridge, to, for women to have an opportunity to express their anger at what they've endured from men who are abusive. And even though they're, you know, it's like holding it all at one time if possible, but not losing anything along the way. So trying to hold the context and trying to be understanding and compassionate. Certainly men need that model to them. That's absolutely true. But at the same time, for women not to get lost in the shuffle, you know, if they're angry and they've endured great suffering, to not to come to a false and bypassed form of forgiveness, but to move through their authentic and legitimate feelings so that they can reach a more authentic place of forgiveness where it's possible. And, you know, rather than feigning it and going back into the role of listener, supporter, attuned connector, at the same time to allow some space for themselves to acknowledge and to accept that they've endured sometimes great atrocities that are sometimes even unforgivable, and to really authentically own that as part of their own healing process.
Again, we're focused on self, you know, before we can really trudge out there and
absolutely,
and make things happen, you know.
Because I think the collective unconscious is still at the self place, mostly. That's why I think we have such a hard time with the relationship. We got to really, like, you know, clear through the emotional debris and learn the lessons on a self or individual soul level, so when we interface with other, we're coming at it from a much healthier and more, you know, potentially evolving place of connection.
Yeah, and I think that healthy aspect has a lot to do with the balance, because I know when, you know, when you're sitting in a space where you're heavily burdened with things, and then you come into this awakening, and now you want a full-fledged steam ahead, and then go to that other extreme. And I think that we need to find that healthy balance, you know, because it isn't about women taking a righteous role and asking men to step forward and, you know, confess their sins. What we're looking for is this bridge to be able to, like I said, move forward in purposeful creation of, you know, a better world and a better future for our own evolution.
Right. But I think we get there by being really authentic. You know, truth is the gateway to the moment for me. So I think that we have to clean up some of the nonsense that's happened, and that has to happen through a genuine process of women having an opportunity to safely communicate what's happened. And I think it's for men as well to, you know, to like let down into the place of that wasn't okay, not only on an individual level, but what my gender did wasn't okay, is a fantastic gift to them as well, to help them to really hear it and really absorb it and really take it in and unburden themselves, so we can all move forward in a fresher way, in a more authentic way, not pretending everything's healed, but really healing it.
Wow, Jeff. Well, this has really been a great hour. I wish we could do more. Perhaps we can come back and visit this again, because you haven't quite dedicated what time of the year we're going to start this program. Or
Yeah. Let me get a little clearer on that.
Well, I encourage all men and women out there, you know, who have listened to the show, to really take this inside and give it some thought and really pay attention to your feelings, you know, and what resonates with you with that. Because
now is not too soon.
Right. We can begin right now, you know, and Jeff can fill us in along the way. All right, Jeff. Well, thank you so much. And again, people, you can contact Jeff at www.soulshaping.com, as well as visit him on his Facebook page. And also, if you would kindly tweet the show or pass on the, we'd appreciate it. All right, thanks so much for joining us. Take it easy, Jeff.
Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. It's been very enjoyable, and we look forward to talking with you again.
Yes, thank you, Jeff. And thank you, Craig.
Thank you,
Sue. Great having you back on again.
Great to be here.
Okay. And remember, everyone, find the joy in enjoying your journey. Until next week. Bye-bye now.